Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In my 27 years as a Victorian policewoman, I investigated everything from a stolen bicycle to a stolen life. Policing taught me a lot about human nature, which I explore in my podcasts with a variety of fascinating guests discussing the human side and impact of crime, not only on their lives, but mine as well. My podcasts are not suitable for children and some adults for that matter. If you find yourself affected by my subject matter, please contact Lifeline or any other support service or person that you feel comfortable with. My guests provide their recollection of an event or incident, sharing their thoughts and their emotions, but it's theirs and not everyone will agree with them. I understand that and I hope you do too. Thank you.
But on the seventh day, I just woke up and I felt different. Some weight had been lifted off my shoulders. The world just seemed rosier. The sun was shining brighter. Every day just seemed to get better and better. I said, I don't know what you've done to me. I feel a lot more like the old me.
Today starts with an important warning. In the first 20 minutes maybe, Rob talks very openly about his role in the Bourke Street incident of January 2017, where a man deliberately drove his car into pedestrians just walking around town, meeting up with friends like so many of us do, shopping and maybe sitting on the seats and watching the world go by. This man killed 6 innocent people and seriously injured 27. But there were many, many more that incident affected, including emergency service workers like Rob. It took around 2 years for the effects of this incident to really take a hold on Rob, and he took time off to try and deal with the demons that he was facing on a daily basis. Rob returned to work and decided the alcohol that he was self-medicating with wasn't helping. But in giving up alcohol, those visions, the smells, those haunting memories all began to rise to the surface. And in seeking help through counselling, he found it was actually perpetuating these horrors in his mind. So he set about finding something different to try and ease this pain. And this is where he discovered NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming, with Costa Nicolaitis. We talk in depth today about not only Bourke Street, but how Rob discovered NLP and how it just made him feel different. I think I recall it was just after one session with Costa. And Rob has now joined forces with Costa, a registered psychologist and fellow NLP master practitioner who's worked in the field for 29 years, working with everything from depression to schizophrenia and specialising in complex trauma, PTS and personality disorders. Rob and Costa together conducted an NLP trial where 3 former members and 7 volunteers from the armed forces and the prison system agreed to take part in that trial. In the following weeks, we talk with Costa and Neil, one of the volunteers who took part in the trial, to tell us about their experience with NLP and the amazing benefits it has produced. So until next week, take care. Have a good week. See ya. Rob, in 2017, you were seconded to the homicide squad as if you haven't had enough to deal with, but you are seconded there to assist with the investigation into the Bourke Street incident. And before we start this, I suppose a trigger warning for a number of people that have been involved in this. Rob's going to go into this in a bit of detail. So, you know, if you need to go and have a cup of coffee and take 5 or 10 minutes out, please do. But whatever you feel comfortable with, Rob, can you tell us about being seconded and doing that job?
Yeah, look, I remember the day of the incident because myself and another detective were actually walking down towards Bourke Street. I can't recall what for, but we both heard police sirens like I'd never heard before, and we couldn't understand what was going on. So whatever our plan was, where we were going, we turned around and went back to the office because we knew something was going on in the middle of the city and we didn't quite know what. So at the time we weren't armed, so we decided to go back and put some kit on and just in case we needed, because it just sounded bigger than anything that I'd ever been involved in before. We started monitoring the radio and were listening to this incident unfold, and we didn't attend the incident that day, but we got seconded off to the homicide squad shortly thereafter. And I remember on the first day when we arrived, our senior sergeant pretty much said to us, look, there's a lot of footage of this incident. It's up to you whether you watch it or not. It's pretty horrific. And so we were given the option of watching it. I was given the task of taking statements off people who had been hit by the vehicle but had not died as a result of their injuries, but had some pretty horrific injuries and life-changing injuries in a lot of the cases. Day one I grabbed my folder and had a list of names of people that I had to go and visit in hospitals and start taking their statements. And a lot of the people are still shaking their heads at that incident weeks later, that did this really happen? It was just so unbelievable that somebody made the decision to do what they did. It really was like living in a bit of a time warp at the time. But as the story was unfolding and I was interviewing all these victims and seeing them in hospital in all sorts of horrendous conditions and, you know, frames and body parts all over the place, it was and in most cases their family were around them. So, you know, you were sort of dealing not just with the victim, but you're dealing with the emotions of the family as well. So I did that for the first 3 weeks and recognised that I probably needed to be benched for a little while because I couldn't get the images out of my head.
So you watched the videos, did you? Well, a couple, just so that you knew what you were dealing with and what to ask the people, I suppose.
I had to know where the victim was, when they were hurt, who were they with. And so to do the job properly, viewing the footage was something that had to be done. And, you know, in some cases, some people don't even remember being hit. They literally walked out of a building straight into a moving car. So some people had no recollection of the event at all, which was, for me, was probably a good thing, because we didn't necessarily need their evidence in court because the whole thing was captured on CCTV and, you know, iPhones. It was probably the most captured crime of the century. So I reached out to my senior sergeant and just explained that, you know, I think I needed a break, which he gave me. And I think she tasked me with listening to James Gargasaurus's prison phone calls. So every day I'd come into work and I'd sit there and listen to him talking. I think he generally made about 5 or 6 8-minute phone calls per day. So that was one of my jobs, was to sit there and listen to that and make notes of what he was talking about, because obviously there was evidence that was going to come out of some of his conversations, which a lot of the evidence as to his motivation did come out of those phone calls. So, But listening to him talk about the incident in such a blasé, almost comical way that he felt about the incident and the notoriety he was going to get from it, probably just made me even angrier. So I really struggled to sleep after that for quite a while. I just kept reliving the images, and then because I had a connection to the victims, by I was sitting with them sometimes a whole day trying to take a statement in between nurses coming in and checking bandages and doing meds and all that sort of stuff. So I was spending a lot of time with these people, and so I was putting those two frames together at night when I was having when I dream about it, think about it before I go to bed. It seemed to be the last thing I thought about for quite some time, and so I was just constantly reliving that memory of what I'd seen and what I'd heard from the victims.
Mm. You've obviously, there's just so many incidents that have affected you, and well, wouldn't they? You're a normal human being. When did you first notice that maybe you weren't managing too well? So was it before you went to, say, organised crime or before gaming and vice? How long ago do you think that something wasn't quite right?
Yeah, I think about, for me, 2007, so that's 2 years after the start of the death threats. I remember driving to Mildura to see a friend of mine up there, and I'd stopped in a country town somewhere at the back of Bendigo. I still don't remember the name of the town, and got out of the car and just have a break from driving because it was, in the wee hours of the morning, and I had this overwhelming sense of panic that I'd never had it before, and I felt really vulnerable standing out in the middle of nowhere. And so for me, that became my first panic attack, and I didn't understand it. I didn't know what was happening to me. And I just stood there frozen, and I actually flagged a car down and asked the people, "Where am I?" I literally didn't know where I was. It's like my brain just switched off. And so I continued the drive to Mildura, and the whole time it was just sheer panic, not knowing what was happening to me. I felt like I was having a heart attack. I had no phone reception out there. I just had to keep driving until I can get to Mildura. And I drove straight to the hospital and just said, what's happening? I don't understand it. So they gave me some medication just to calm me down. And so from that day, I realised all these things had built up, and I wasn't coping. But again, I didn't seek help. I continued on with policing. I continued on putting myself in dangerous situations and used alcohol to deal with it. That helped me sleep at night. But the panic attacks sort of became more frequent and it began happening in situations where there was no need to panic. It was just this constant feeling of not being safe anymore. And so that pretty much continued on until I sought treatment in the last 2 years. So I pretty much battered on with it, with policing, and kept working and was busy the whole time and throwing myself into dangerous situations until about July 2019. And then I really could sort of see my personality starting to change. I was always been a fairly laid-back, patient sort of a person, and I'd started finding myself getting really easily upset. So I spoke to my boss at the time and just said, "Look, I think I need to take some time off." And he agreed. He could see that things weren't, I wasn't my usual self. And so I took a month off and I went and got had some psychology and thought, after 4 weeks, all right, I'm good to come back to work, and threw myself back into it. The unit I was working at was probably the busiest place I've worked in my entire career. We were doing warrants pretty much every week. And I continued on for another 6 months, and then I decided in December 2019 to stop drinking because I was drinking more than I needed to, and I wasn't drinking for the right reasons. So I decided to stop drinking, and which I was I did quite successfully, but that's when everything that I'd buried rose to the surface, and that's mm-hmm. when I realised that I really need help.
Mm-hmm. There's a problem here. Yeah. Gee, I get that.
Yeah, and so that was the start of my recovery. I did go back to work after that 2 weeks of leave and after giving up alcohol for 2 weeks. And I remember walking into the office on a Sunday afternoon. There was nobody around. I was the on-call member for our team that afternoon. And I walked in and threw my bag at my desk, sat on the chair and went to turn on the computer and just picked up my bag, turned around and walked out the door. Just didn't have any energy.
You just had enough, had you?
Yeah, I had nothing left to give. I needed to start concentrating on me and getting myself better, and that policing was going to take a backward step to that. So I pretty much walked out the door and never returned. And once I'd been away for a while, I realised that there was no way I could return to policing. It was just, I just didn't have the energy. I didn't have the mental capacity to deal with anything else until I recovered. But that was a good day. It was my worst day, but it was also my best day because it put me on a path of discovery and a bit of soul searching and finding other ways to cope, and alcohol wasn't part of that plan. So it was really a case of now just let all this stuff this trauma that's been hidden for so long come to the surface and deal with it. And that was probably the best decision I ever made. Most uncomfortable thing I've ever done, but the best decision.
Yeah, I get that. And how did you deal with it, Rob?
I went down the traditional path with psychology and seeing a psychiatrist. For 6 months, I didn't really see much value in it as much as they were trying to help. Psychiatrist pretty much asked me what meds I wanted. I said, none. I'm done self-medicating. And the psychology, I got to the point where going to the session was causing me more grief and stress than I was feeling better after it. So I think I told her that I was feeling fine and thanks very much for everything you've done, and I walked away from that as well. And then I set about trying to find another way of getting better. And so I ended up doing, and the insurance company at the time were offering, or were running a trial on alternative therapies. And of course, that was perfect timing for me because the psychology route wasn't working for me. If anything, it was probably making my situation worse. And so I looked at anything I could do. I did art therapy. I did Qigong. I did flotation therapy. And started going back to the gym and doing a whole heap of things to try and help. And it certainly kept me nice and balanced for a little while. Things weren't getting worse. Things weren't really getting much better. But I could see that if I continued down this path that I would see some success down the track. But then somebody suggested getting a life coach, and I had no idea what a life coach did, and so I did some research around that, because remember, I'm sitting at home doing nothing, so I had plenty of time on my hands. And so I started researching what life coaching would possibly offer me, and discovered that a couple of the courses offered NLP training, and that sort of triggered an interest. And when I looked at NLP, I got really interested in what that might be able to do for me. And so rather than hiring a life coach, I thought, bugger this, I'll go and become one, and I can treat myself or get treatment while I'm doing the course. And that's exactly what happened. I spent the next 14 months studying life coaching and all the NLP courses that they offered, and gave me a great understanding of how the subconscious mind stores trauma. And it was just an eye-opener for me, because once I understood how things were stored, memories were stored, it gave me an opportunity to remove some of those memories. And I was lucky enough to meet a fellow student, Costa. And Costa had been a psychologist for 29 years, and he was a big believer in NLP being more effective than psychology. So that really surprised me, and I thought, well, if he thinks it's good, I'm willing to try it. So, and then Costa, who he'd been working in the field of trauma for most of his career, decided to try and develop a NLP technique to deal with complex trauma. So where people have a lot of trauma, rather than going to a NLP practitioner and dealing with one trauma at a time, you wanted to be able to tackle them all in one session. And I'm pleased to say that he's done that. Very smart man, very dedicated, and is genuinely wanting to get this message out to people to say there's another way of dealing with trauma. And I went through, I was his first guinea pig, and I went through his technique, and it took about 6 days. But on the seventh day, I just woke up and I felt different. Some weight had been lifted off my shoulders. The world just seemed rosier. The sun was shining brighter. Every day just seemed to get better and better.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
And I rang Costa and I said, I don't So I don't know what you've done to me, but I feel different. I feel a lot more like the old me. And so, that was a path that I crossed, which I'm really glad I crossed because it's been such a benefit to my recovery.
So can you tell us what is – so the traditional method, as I've said in my introduction, cognitive behaviour therapy, CBT, and that is about talking it out, getting it out of your head and sort of releasing it, I suppose, in a way. But as I said, not everybody is a talker like me. You know, I could talk till the cows come home, but some people that's not comfortable. And NLP, well, actually, can I get you to explain what is the difference? What is NLP compared to, say, CBT therapy?
Well, the first thing with NLP, especially this technique that Costa's developed, is you don't have to talk about your trauma, which is because for me with psychology, talking about it reaffirmed it to me every time I went to a session. Whereas with NLP, they don't ask you to talk about the trauma. It's irrelevant what the trauma is. They simply ask you to feel it. And the unconscious mind stores trauma in more a symbolic way. And Costa will explain this probably better than I will. I'll do it in layman's terms. But the unconscious mind will store trauma in some sort of symbolic way. So if I was to say to somebody, think about the incident, where do you feel it in your body? And they might say, you know, in the chest, or they might say in the head or in the arm, whatever it is. What does it feel like? You know, is it, you know, does it have a colour? And the unconscious mind has all this information that you don't even know exists about how it stored the trauma, because it gives its own little code, so it knows what the trauma that looks and feels and smells like that relates to that particular incident. So it stores them all differently in certain different symbolic ways, so it can understand what differentiate between two or three or four or whatever, how many traumas. And so as I feel it and I describe it to Costa during the session, we symbolically take it outside the body and we put it somewhere else. And after we've done that for all the traumas, which, again, you don't need to talk about, you just need to think about it and feel it, and we symbolically remove them from the body, and then Costa asks, well, what would you like to create out of all this trauma? What would you like to put in its place? And so you describe what it is. It could be your favourite holiday destination. It could be your best round of golf. Whatever it is, you recreate a memory to replace the trauma and symbolically put it back in the body, and somehow it works, because what I created with my trauma is now my default program if I think about the trauma. And so the trauma doesn't have the same physiological impact on my body. I don't get the sweats. I don't get the heart palpitations. I don't get the anxiety around that particular trauma, because my default program is now something that I created that I enjoy. And it sounds weird. It sounds crazy. It sounds like mumbo jumbo. But the unconscious mind is incredibly powerful, and the unconscious mind does whatever it can do to protect you. And so if this going through that process protects you from those feelings, then it's up to do that. So, but again, I'll let Costa explain the nuts and bolts of it, because this is his baby. What I can say is it took my unconscious mind about 6 days to readjust to what I've done, but now it's my default program. And so I can think about a trauma now, but I don't get the same physiological reaction in my body as I used to. And that's what, I guess, scares people with trauma, is that feeling inside the body that you feel like you're losing control. and you can't control your thoughts, whereas this process has allowed me to have pleasant thoughts around my trauma.
So I'm thinking now, let's say I'll use me as an example. So with some terrible child abuse material that I've seen, so instead of me talking about what I'd actually seen, you know, this person does this, what Costa and what NLP concentrate on is, let's say Costa would say, how do you feel when you see that material, for instance? And I'd say something like, well, it's a real a deep sadness, like, say, my heart feels really heavy or something along those lines. And so we would be talking about how it makes me feel rather than going through exactly what I saw. And then Costa would, or you would, NLP then gets me to think about, I don't know, something I love. Let's say walking on the beach, the feel of the water on my feet, right? So when I think of the child abuse material, I would then, instead of feeling or visions of what I've seen, I then default to, well, hang on a minute, what about when I walk through that water and I feel the sea? And is that, have I sort of got that?
Yeah.
So sort of.
It allows you to still think about what used to trigger you. It just doesn't trigger you anymore, because you've now got a program that's associated to the trauma, because the brain creates neural pathways when we learn something. The brain will create it. Let's say, for example, you're learning how to ride a bike. You've got to do it several times before the brain actually has that connection in the brain that creates that pathway, that now you don't have to think about it. It's an automatic program in your brain. It's kind of like, that's what Costa's doing through this process, is he's retraining the brain, or retraining that neural pathway to have a different program, hence the neuro-linguistic programming. And so if you do it often enough, it becomes your default program.
Yes.
And as I say, it's something that Costa could probably explain a little bit more, but what I can say from my perspective is I don't have the same physiological reaction. I can think about things that I've seen over the years. I can think about the incident back in 1998. It used to, when I thought about it, used to cause my heart to race. I would get sweaty. I'd have trouble thinking about anything else but that. Now I can think about it quite comfortably. I can talk about it quite comfortably. If you'd asked me those questions about this incident 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to tell that story without breaking down. I can do it now because it doesn't impact me.
Okay. Do you find a hesitancy when you flag, you know, trying a different method to deal with trauma rather than the more traditional treatments that we've spoken about?
I had no hesitation. I was in such a state that I was going to try anything. So,
yeah, but do you find when you suggest this, the NLP, as a process, do you find people are hesitant in trying it because it is something different?
Well, absolutely, yeah. And look, you know, we put out a call for volunteers, and I expected we would be inundated with people, and we certainly got enough for the trial that we conducted. And I think maybe some people, you know, the police have work on evidence-based things where it's all about the evidence. For me, it was, I just want to feel better. But definitely a lot of people might be swayed once they hear people who have been through the process talking about it and how it helped them.
Yeah.
So this is a really good exercise in getting that message out there. And it, like CBT, that wasn't for me. NLP may not be for everybody else. Some people may choose not to believe that it has the power to do what it does, and that's okay. But for those who are willing to try it, you know, I think they'll be very surprised at the results they'll get and give them just some sort of normality back in their life. Because when you're in that state of reliving that trauma and that anxious state and that panic state all the time, you forget what normality is. It's really pleasant to come back to that. I call it my pre-policing state, because I don't think I've ever been the same in 33 years as I was before policing. That definitely changes people. Some people are lucky enough to get away with, you know, being reasonably normal when they leave, but I think a lot of us aren't.
I would agree.
This is a fabulous opportunity for people to try something, to try and get back to that pre-policing state.
Yeah, you and I were talking in preparation for today, and we both said that we really believe we started to change almost, well, I know it was out at the academy. I loved what I did, and I just wanted to throw myself into it, but I can see that I did start changing pretty much the day I walked into the academy. And you said it wasn't all that long after the academy that you realised, you know, that it was very, very triggering. So many things were happening. It was a different world, wasn't it?
It definitely is, because I had a reasonable upbringing and hadn't been exposed to a lot of violence and trauma, and when you're going through the academy and they're rolling out all these crime scene videos and crime scene photos, are sort of the most ghastly sights. This is what you're putting into your thought process, that these are the things you're going to see. And then, you know, to add to that, you graduate and next thing you know, you're knee-deep in it on a regular basis. And death was a very common part of our shifts, you know, over the years. Been to far too many fatals and far too many murders and suicides to want to think about. So there's nothing normal about what we do. So it's not surprising. I think if I look back now, I can say, yeah, the trauma started at the academy. It's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, it is. And as you said before, somebody has to do the job, don't they, that VicPol need to do. But they also need, and not just VicPol, emergency services in general, they need to learn how to manage the trauma load that members are exposed to constantly, because, as you said, it's just the nature of the job. And our concern, your concern and mine and many others, is that police are dropping like flies, and we need to do something. What that is, I don't know, but they need a lot more psychological support and alternatives, maybe speaking to someone or doing an NLP, day, or, you know, they need to do something more than what they're doing, because what they are doing is not working.
No, I think it's just the education around it. If maybe at the academy they were given a lecture from somebody who's spent some time in policing who can say, this is what it does to you. These are some of the things you can do now to prevent that build-up. Because I think it's the build-up. I mean, some people can have PTSD after one incident.
That's right.
Policing, we keep adding and adding and adding to that pile, and maybe they need to be told on day dot, this is what's going to happen. Give people that option. But you talk about, look, in VicPol, it's an organisation. It's not a person, so we can't expect the organisation to have feelings for us, because it's not a living entity. And I was quite surprised. And maybe I shouldn't have been, but I was quite surprised that after I stopped working, I had one phone call in 2 years from the organisation.
Wow, that's terrible.
And that really blew me away. And so again, we can't expect an organisation to fix us when we're broken. They put up flyers and posters all around the place. You know, that doesn't help. They need to be a bit more proactive. The people who are running the organisation, who are in charge, need to do more rather than just putting up some flyers and hoping for the best, because it doesn't work. And we're seeing the numbers of police and other emergency services personnel dropping like flies at the moment. And we'll continue to do so until something's done. So I don't know what the answer is. I'm not an expert, but I know what's working, what's not working is what's currently in place.
Mm, yeah, you're right. That trial that you and Costa conducted, you found 10 volunteers. I think you said 3 were former Victoria Police members, and there were 7 from the armed forces and the prison system, and not the inmates, actually, the prison officers, who agreed to the trial. Just in closing, can you tell us, because next week we're going to talk to Costa and Neil, one of those volunteers, one of those members, but can you just tell us a little bit about the trial and the results of it, how it went?
Yeah, so we had the plan was to do 5 sessions with each volunteer. Not everyone remained in the trial, but everybody in the trial, and Costa does a pre and post questionnaire around the PTSD scale, and so of the 10, he was able to say that even though some didn't come back for their second, third, or fourth, or fifth session, they still had a 50% drop in their PTSD scale after one session.
Wow, 50%.
So it's impressive. And again, I think it's talking to people who have been through it, and like myself, and maybe I'm a little bit biased, so I'll leave it up to others who have been through the trial, but certainly from my perspective, it was a game changer for me, because I can still think about those incidents now, but I don't have the reaction to them like I used to, and that means I can get on with life. I can get back to being a normal person that I was pre-policing. And that doesn't happen overnight. I've got a lot of 33 years. There's a lot to undo there, but I know that I'm slowly getting back to the person I was beforehand in terms of my mental health. So it's certainly been a worthwhile exercise, and I was very proud to be part of that trial. I think next week, speaking to Costa and Neil, you'll get a lot more information, and hopefully some members or anybody out there who thinks they can benefit from it, give it a try.
Yeah, look, and thanks for that, Rob. And in closing, I can only say I'm sorry the Victoria Police and the community in general lost the services and experience of such a compassionate and dedicated detective like yourself. However, you are now giving those who are going through dealing with the traumas they've been exposed to another option for them to try. And really, I think what's there to lose? It's just another way of dealing with trauma, which might just work for those who haven't been able to find the peace that they're searching for. And as you said, next week we hear from Costa and his foray into NLP and what and how he and yourself may be able to help when, you know, people think that there's nothing more that you can do or try to help with those traumatic thoughts, like the visions, the nightmares, the smells, the triggers, just for starters. And as you said, we also chat with Neil, who was one of the members who volunteered to take part in the trial. So, Rob, thank you from me and from everybody that you've helped, and hopefully you help in the future. And for everyone out there, have a great week, and we'll chat next week.
Terrific. Thanks, Darrell.
Thank you, Rob. We'll be right back. As you've probably noticed, we've moved to a new platform called Acast. I think that's the right expression, I've got no idea. And my previous reviews haven't transferred over. I need reviews. Could you do me a favour and put up a review? And thank you so much for your support and patronage. With your help, I can give you that little bit extra. Thanks.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.